Kelsey, you may begin whenever you're ready.
Good morning. Neil Pomerantz, bar number 24741, on behalf of the appellant in this case, Asphalt Specialties Company, Incorporated. I would like to try to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal today. Your Honors, Commerce City promulgated an appeal statute that advised taxpayers that they could appeal to district court within 30 days of receiving a hearing decision from the city. The city's code further stated in unqualified terms that the taxpayer must wait for the city hearing decision to issue before commencing any further appeals. Asphalt Specialties followed those instructions and waited for its hearing as it worked in good faith with the city's auditors to substantially narrow the issues and amounts in dispute in its tax appeal.
Excuse me, counsel, where is it stated that that you're required to wait for a hearing before taking an appeal?
It's stated most specifically in Regulation 20-12-1, which was in effect during all periods at issue, has since been removed from the city's code. And that regulation, I'll read it to you, says, and I quote, the hearing determination notice, and that's the term used in the city's code for the hearing decision. It says the hearing determination notice must have been issued before any appeal can be taken by the taxpayer. I don't think that could be any clearer. This case raises the question whether Asphalt Specialties properly awaited a hearing before the Commerce City Finance Department.
Is it your position that that statement in the code undoes the statutory provisions in the Colorado Revised Statutes?
Not at all, Your Honor. I think it's fully consistent with the state statute, which is 29.2106.1. Subpart 9 of that state statute specifically gives jurisdictions the opportunity to supplement the two appeal routes that are guaranteed in that state statute. Those two appeal routes being under subpart 3, an appeal to the executive director, and under subpart 8, an appeal to district court. The exhaustion rules that are relied upon by the city, the exhaustion rules that include the deemed denial requirements, are specifically tied to those two appeal routes and only to those appeal routes. They're introduced twice, once with respect to the subpart 3 appeal and once with respect to the subpart 8 appeal. Wholly apart from that, subpart 9 says, in addition to these appeal routes, in lieu of these appeal routes, the city may create alternative procedures. It may permit additional procedures for a taxpayer to appeal to court.
Well, let me ask you this question, Mr. Pomerantz. If assuming that within the statutory time period, Asphalt Specialties had filed an appeal as provided in the statutes without waiting for the decision or the hearing, would that appeal have been allowable?
It would have been, Your Honor. Those two rights under subparts 3 and 8 are guaranteed to all taxpayers, and that's the uniformity that was really intended by that state statute, is to say no matter what local jurisdiction you're in, all taxpayers have those rights, and included within those rights is the right to say after 90 days or 180 days if it's been extended, we're not waiting any longer, we're treating our local remedies as exhausted, and we're going forward with an appeal either to the executive director or to district court. They would be required to do that if the city elected not to add any additional appeal procedures. The city is not required to do that. Subpart 9 is optional. The city could simply say, we're sticking with the two appeal routes that are provided in the state law and only those. And in fact, after the city has changed its code recently, that's what they do. They tell taxpayers you have only two appeal routes. It's the two appeal routes that are stated in the state statute. It says go to the state statute to review your appeal rights. During the period at issue, however, Commerce City did what it was permitted to do. It supplemented those two appeal rights. It created a third appeal right that didn't have any timing requirements within it, didn't have any deemed denial provisions, didn't incorporate in any way the deemed denial provisions that are in subparts 3 or 8. It said quite clearly, the only thing you must do is appeal within 30 days of receiving your hearing decision. And then the regulation that accompanied that statute, a regulation that I should add, has been enacted by the city council by ordinance, and so it has the full force of the statute. The regulation said you must wait for that hearing decision to issue before you take your further appeal. Uh, I don't think there's any dispute that we followed the exact terms of the code as they were written. The city has never argued that we didn't follow the terms of the code. The terms of the code, I think, are quite clear. They do say, and I'm reading here from section 20-12-1, they say a taxpayer may appeal to district court as provided in section 20-12. It says in addition to your options under the state appeal statute, you can appeal as provided in this section 20-12. And then section 20-12, as I said, says you must commence that appeal within 30 days of receiving the hearing decision, complemented by the regulation that I've read to you. The city doesn't say we misinterpreted those code provisions, that we didn't act in accordance with its code provisions. In fact, those provisions, particularly the regulation that says you must wait for that hearing decision, is, I think, significantly mentioned nowhere in the city's briefing, and it's mentioned nowhere in the district court order below. The city has made no effort to reconcile its argument that we were required to deem our appeal denied, has made no effort to reconcile that argument with the express language of its own regulation that says you must wait for that hearing decision. What the city is really arguing, although I think it doesn't come out and say it expressly, is that this right of appeal allowed by its own code was unlawful, that it was unenforceable, that it need not follow the terms of its own code. The city is saying to us, Asphalt Specialties, you should have ignored it as well, because the only permissible appeal routes are those set forth in the state appeal statute, and those routes require a taxpayer to treat its local remedies as exhausted within 90 days of filing its protest if it has not received the hearing decision. And that leads, I think, to really one of our main points here, is that that contention, that this additional appeal route that they provided was somehow unenforceable or was trumped by the state appeal statute, simply misreads the statute. Subsections 3 and 8 of the appeal statute describe those two methods of appeal that I've discussed, an appeal first to the executive director of the Department of Revenue under subpart 3, and an appeal to district court pursuant to subpart 8. And it is within the discussion of each of those appeal routes that the state defines when a taxpayer's local remedies are exhausted. I think it's critical that the state legislature repeated those rules twice. They didn't do it once up front and say, look, for any and all appeal routes that are supplied to a taxpayer, whether under subpart 3, 8, 9, or anywhere else, it doesn't say, here's one rule for when the taxpayer's local remedies are exhausted. It didn't do that. It repeated those rules twice, almost verbatim. The first time it did so is in connection with discussing the appeal under subpart 3, and then again the exact same language in discussing appeals under subpart 8. And it's critical that these deemed denial provisions are tied expressly and exclusively to those two appeal routes. And if there's any doubt about that, I'd urge the court to review the introductory language to those definitions of exhaustion of local remedies. The first time that exhaustion definition is stated, it is introduced with this language, and I'm reading from subpart 2C of the state appeal statute. It says the taxpayer shall request the hearing pursuant to subsection 3, the executive director hearing, within 30 days after the taxpayer's exhaustion of local remedies. And then it goes on to define exhaustion of local remedies again for purposes of the appeal pursuant to subsection 3. The rules, exhaustion rules, are repeated again in subsection 8B. Equally emphatic here, it says the taxpayer shall appeal to the district court pursuant to this subsection 8 within 30 days after the taxpayer's exhaustion of local remedies. And then it says for purposes of this subsection 8, exhaustion of local remedies means, and it defines exhaustion again. Now you get to subpart 9, the elective route that a city can invoke to supply an additional appeal option. It doesn't have that definition of exhaustion of local remedies. The legislature certainly could have done that. It knew how to do that, but it didn't. So subpart 9 says, and I think it's clear, it says in lieu of these two other appeal options, quote, a taxpayer may pursue judicial review of a local government's final decision thereon as otherwise provided in such local government's ordinance. The city here elected to have an additional option. It provided an additional route for appealing to district court. It says so expressly in 20-12-1 of the code that there's two ways you can get to district court. One is pursuant to subpart 8 of the state statute, and the other is pursuant to section 20-12 of the city's own code. And again, that provision says, all you got to do is wait 30 days, or rather, appeal within 30 days of getting your hearing decision. It follows that by saying, and you must wait for that hearing decision before you may appeal further.
Is a decision to deny a hearing decision?
It's not a hearing decision. I think it's a final decision for purposes of the 106A4 appeal, which requires us under CRCP 106B to take our appeal within 60 days, I'm sorry, within 30 days of the final decision. The letter that we got from the city that says, we're not going to give you that hearing, operates as that final decision. It is the completion of the town's action. It's telling us emphatically, you're just not going to get the hearing. And that's what we're complaining of in our 106A4 action. It's not the hearing decision, however, that's stated in the city's appeal route. And so that's why we have really two different claims for relief that address that. The first is saying, look, under these circumstances, where a city has denied us our pre-judicial remedies, the case law in Colorado says that we can be excused from following those pre-judicial remedies and go straight to court. In other words, if the city's denying us that first step that we need to go through, we can't be held to go through that first step. The second claim that addresses that is our mandamus claim, 106A2. We're saying that if the court finds that we are required to get that piece of paper, to get that hearing decision in order to go forward, then the court should not permit the city to simply say, well, we're not going to give it to you. The court should order the city to give us the hearing, to give us then the hearing decision that would open up that appeal window that they've expressly provided for us.
Counsel, it appears to me that the problem here was the fact that the city auditor wanted some time to do further auditing work before holding the hearing, a course in which apparently from the record it's indicated that you agreed with. You argue issues of waiver and estoppel. Can you describe to me very quickly how that was raised in the trial court, the issues of waiver and estoppel?
We raised it in our complaint. We raised it in our, we didn't have a trial, obviously, that this comes to this court on a motion to dismiss. In our pleadings, which the facts of which must be accepted as correct, we stated that we relied upon representations from the city that we were required to wait for their hearing determination notice, the hearing decision before appealing. We also relied on representations from the city auditors, and that the city should not now be permitted to act in a manner that's inconsistent with those prior representations that we relied upon to our detriment.
Did you also raise those in your response to the motion to dismiss?
We did, yes. I want to add one more thing. There's nothing unusual at all about the city adding an appeal route here that doesn't require the taxpayer to deem its local remedies exhausted and to go forward. It's a very common rule. For example, it's a rule at the state level for all state taxes, income taxes, sales taxes, use taxes. There's no time frame upon which the state must hold its hearing. The taxpayer must wait for that hearing to take place for as long as necessary. And there's a sound reason for that. Very often the parties can accomplish a lot in working together before that hearing takes place to narrow the issues and or the amounts in dispute. And that's exactly what happened here. We weren't sitting on our hands for the 2-year period that's at issue. We were working with the city auditors to substantially narrow the issues in dispute, the amounts in dispute. Ultimately, the revised assessment that was issued by the city early in 2008 reduced the assessment amount by more than 50%. So there was a lot that was accomplished that would narrow the number of issues that would need to be addressed in any further hearing and perhaps eliminate the need for further litigation.
Mr. Pomerantz, I'm sorry, I'm eating up your time.
No, wait one second. We stop a clock for a second. I'm sorry, go ahead, Judge.
Fine, that's fine with me. I do have the authority that indicates that the doctrines of waiver or estoppel can be used proactively by a plaintiff in a complaint?
To be honest with you,
as opposed to as a defense.
I can't recall if any of the cases that we cited in our brief involved that fact pattern. I can't.
Okay. And the trial court in its order on the motion to dismiss did not rule upon those defenses?
No, it didn't. It didn't address them at all.
did you do anything to seek a ruling on those defenses? Or I'm calling them defenses, you used them proactively, but...
We did not file a motion for reconsideration, no. I'll reserve the last minute. Thank you.
Good morning, Patrick Wilson, registration number 26303 on behalf of Commerce City. Your Honor, this is a case of a simple missed statute of limitations and the application of the exhaustion of administrative remedies doctrine. In this case, Asphalt Specialties simply did not act on its right to appeal for over 2 years after the notice of assessment and the request for hearing. Therefore, this court should uphold the trial court's dismissal for the grounds that we need to have finality in our administrative and our judicial processes. People cannot be allowed to wait indefinitely and raise their appeal rights whenever they so desire unilaterally.
But wasn't it the city that suggested that they wait?
The city suggested that in one of the emails that's in our motion to dismiss, that should a delay be requested, it can be requested. And that request was made, and the hearing wasn't held immediately. It wasn't held in the fall of 2005. It went along, and it actually was never held. There was no hearing. And what I'm suggesting to you in this case is that at the expiration of that 180 days, when the administrative remedies are deemed denied, that's when Asphalt Specialties should have either appealed to the Department of Revenue, to the district court, or it should have had an express written agreement to extend the time to hold the hearing.
Why an express written agreement?
Because I don't...
If there is, in fact, an agreement.
Because our code requires, if you have an extension, that it be a written agreement from the city manager, signed by or approved by the city manager, to delay the time frame for the hearing. And so if any type of hearing is going to take...
There was a written suggestion made by the city that was accepted, as I understand it. And are you saying that's insufficient to comply?
That is insufficient. Our code specifically requires a city manager, an authorized official, an offhand comment by a staff member, an offhand comment in an email cannot be interpreted as an agreement to extend a hearing time frame.
But wasn't the suggestion made to accommodate the audit, to have a complete audit?
The suggestion was made because this assessment, that the city has to file its notice of assessment within 3 years or it starts to lose taxes on the prior 3 years. So it has to go out and issue that assessment. In this case, we didn't have any information from Asphalt Specialties. So yes, we did need to go in there. And yes, over the course of time, the assessment was reduced once we got information.
When did you ultimately reduce the assessment?
I'm not exactly sure. It was after the 180 days though. It was perhaps in 2006 or maybe even in 2007.
So did you revive a right to appeal from a new assessment?
Nope. The right of appeal starts to run from the date that you request a hearing. After 180 days, you have three options. You can go ahead and just go straight to the Department of Revenue. You can go straight to the district court. Those were the remedies that Asphalt Specialties had. It didn't do that. It chose to sit on those rights for another 2 years.
So you disagree that there is a third option available if the local government provides a supplemental avenue for appeal. You disagree with that?
Well, I disagree with it in some. I agree that subsection 9 does allow for that, and I would ask you to look at the code provisions in the city's code. And all it does is it says you have two options, and it refers the reader back to the two appellate statutes, the appeal statute, subsection 3, and a right to appeal to the Department of Revenue, and subsection 8, a right to go to the district court. What it does probably suggest is that it could be a 106 type appeal, abusive discretion type standard, as opposed to a de novo hearing. That's the alternative remedy, is the type, not the timing.
But it does not refer to 106, does it?
It does in section 2012-3. It says it should apply, or the hearing would be
in the section that you were referring to. You have 1 and 2.
Mm-hmm.
And one consists of both the statutory appeals, correct?
No. The first subpart says the taxpayer has the alternative to either appeal the decision of the city manager directly to the Adams County District Court as provided in this code section and subsection 8, or appeal under subsection 3 of the statute directly to the Department of Revenue. And then two sections down, it suggests under 2012-3 that any kind of alternative route is simply just going to be a 106 appeal. It doesn't change any timeframes or any deadlines.
So the first provision you talked about, you can go to the district court either under this section or and the statute. That is not two different avenues to the district court in your view?
It's not two different avenues. It's two different options of once you get to the district court. It can either be a de novo review as provided by the Title 29 statute, or it can be a simple 106. If the parties feel that all the facts have been, but you know, that requires that there be a hearing.
Well, a 106A4.
Correct.
The time doesn't begin to run until there's a final decision, is
right.
it?
Right. And so when
and
that.
So why is not a 106A4 proper in this case?
Because there's been no hearing. There's no administrative record for the court to review.
What about a mandamus?
Well, the mandamus doesn't work because there's no clear right to a hearing. There's no clear duty to hold a hearing. There's no, and I'll tell you why that, because this was a jeopardy assessment. And there is no right to a hearing in a jeopardy assessment. Clearly, even if it wasn't a jeopardy assessment, the legislature contemplated situations where local governments are not going to hold a hearing for whatever reason. That's why they have that deemed denial provision. And that's why they give the remedy of.
Do you disagree that there's a provision that says the taxpayer cannot appeal under 20-12 until you have a hearing determination?
No, that was the regulation. And so if you're going to choose that option, that only applies, the third avenue, the 106 appeal, only applies if there is a hearing.
Okay, so it looks like you've got the taxpayer in a catch-22, and that is, like, you can't do anything unless there's a hearing. We can deny you a hearing. You can't make us give a hearing.
No, all the taxpayer has to do is exercise its rights under subsection 3 and subsection 8. And when that hearing has not occurred in that first 180 days, you either get the agreement or you proceed under subsection 3 or subsection 8. You have three options in this case.
Let me ask you this, counsel.
Yes.
Let's talk about the 90 days or the 180 days without a hearing. Let us assume the parties stipulate to hold a hearing 6 months later in order to allow further auditing. Are you saying that there could be no appeal thereafter?
I think that after 100... It's 90 days, and then it can be extended to 180 days.
But I'm suggesting that the parties mutually agree to extend the time from 180 days to, let's say, 9 months. Are you saying that agreement is unenforceable?
No, I believe such an agreement could be enforceable.
Okay, so it's a matter of any other statute of limitations that can be waived, right?
Well, yeah, I've always questioned that. It seems like it might be jurisdictional. I'm not sure private parties have the right to, you know, to dictate whether a court has jurisdiction.
Well, that's what I'm asking you. Is it your view that it's jurisdictional and the parties can't agree to extend the time?
Well, I have to say that it is jurisdictional. I do have to say it's jurisdictional.
Do you
and I think
have
that,
the authority for that proposition?
I think that
what,
there's...
What other statute limitations can you think of that, aside perhaps from the immunity statute, that is jurisdictional?
I've always considered a failure to file an appeal under 106 within the first 30 days of final agency action to be jurisdictional. Now, perhaps I'm missing.
But there you have agency action.
Exactly. And here we have a deemed denial provision, which is a substitute for that agency action. When that 180 days passes, that's the triggering point by which the 30 days under any scenario starts to run. So you have really a 210 days from the request for hearing. And that's when the case needs to be filed, either with the Department of Revenue or the District Court.
Can a party be stopped from objecting on the basis of a lack of jurisdiction? Can a party be stopped?
I don't believe a local
word's lack of jurisdiction.
Right. I don't believe, you know, the case law is clear. I think I cite to the first place case. We can't have parties stopping local governments, state government, what have you, based upon statements made by unauthorized staff members who are just, you know, don't have the authority to find the city. Local government employees are faced with questions all the time. The staff members can't be the lawyers for the parties that they are adverse to.
But counsel, the district court here did not rule upon the waiver or estoppel issues.
It did not.
And I would presume that whether or not the auditor was authorized to say what he said or not is a matter of fact.
I don't agree. I think that the code provision specifically requires that it be the city manager who expressly agrees upon any type of extension.
And are you suggesting that there is no case that says the statement from a person, a municipal officer that perhaps is unauthorized to make that statement, cannot be the basis for an estoppel?
I'm suggesting that we cannot amend the statute, and we cannot amend the code based upon an offhand statement by an employee of a local government.
The question is not whether you can supersede it. The question is whether you can waive it.
Well, with respect to waiver, I don't know the answer to that question. I will point out, though, on the estoppel and waiver claims, and a waiver is a intentional relinquishment of a known right. There are no allegations in the complaint that that was done here. Estoppel, and we have to be talking about equitable estoppel because there's no promissory estoppel components here. Equitable estoppel must be that one party was ignorant of the facts. And there's no allegation in the complaint that any party was ignorant of the facts that were here. What it was there was a misunderstanding on the part of Asphalt Specialties of what their requirements to do to preserve their appellate rights were. And then what it should have been is that they should have proceeded with the two adequate remedies at the expiration of that 180 days.
Should this have been determined whether a stop or a waiver after an evidentiary hearing? Because this was determined on a motion to dismiss, wasn't it?
Well, I'm not sure what the, you know, what we asked the court to do was to dismiss the, you know, really the estoppel and the waiver weren't really claims for relief. And I think counsel recognized that they were defenses. I'm assuming that the trial court considered those. We provided case law that those things should not stop the city from enforcing the statute of limitations in this case. I think that can be ruled as a matter of law. The case law suggests that estoppel can only be applied very narrowly against governmental authorities. You can't ask these staff members to be the lawyers for the parties that are appearing before them and advising them.
Well, if the question of waiver and estoppel is simply a matter of pleading, doesn't the law say that they have the right to amend?
They could have the right to amend. I still think as a matter of law, they can't. They do not apply in this instance. What right has the city given up? The city is simply enforcing its code. And you're saying, well, you've waived something. Well, what have we waived? I've never heard anything as to what it is we've supposedly waived.
You've waived the right to deny a hearing.
We've waived the right to deny a hearing. I don't believe that's the case. The statute specifically contemplates situations where no hearing is going to be held. What Asphalt Specialties needs to do is they need to appeal within 30 days after the expiration of that 180 days. That's what they need to do. There's no real estoppel or waiver issue that really bears into this unless you're going to take a offhand email comment from a staff member and say, well, that changes the statute and the time frames, and we're going to forget about a uniform appellate procedure.
Didn't the conduct of the parties, wasn't the conduct of Commerce City consistent with that representation by the unauthorized staff member? Simply
because we're going to go through and work with the taxpayer to try and really get at what's truly taxable. Simply because we're doing that does not mean that, oh yeah, we're going to work with you for 2 years and then we're going to have a litigation over this as well. I don't think that's inconsistent.
You've asked them, though, you're acting consistent with the request that they give up their right for an immediate hearing.
We didn't ask them to give up. We said, you know, you can request an extension of time.
But they didn't request an extension of time.
They did not, and they did not appeal either.
And why was not a hearing held then?
Probably because I do not know why a hearing wasn't held.
Isn't the fact that a hearing is not held action by the city consistent with what the auditor was suggesting?
The fact that the hearing was not held?
Yes, because you did not deny a hearing at the beginning. A hearing was scheduled,
no.
Was it not?
I'm assuming
to be scheduled.
Well, it was not scheduled. I don't know. That wasn't part of our motion to dismiss. What it was is that when that 180, again, I can't reemphasize that enough, that there has to be some finality. I don't think that Commerce City can deviate from the time frames that are implicit and expressed in the appeal statute. And those are added in there because we need to have that uniform access to the courts. Article 6, Section 19, as cited in the Walgreens case, we can't have local jurisdictions dotting the land with different statute of limitations.
I would certainly think that everybody would agree you couldn't do that unilaterally. The question is why the parties cannot themselves agree to deviate the time limits, and you say it's because it's jurisdictional.
Well, if it's jurisdictional, then they certainly could not affect the court's jurisdiction. If there's no other questions, I thank you for your time.
Thank you, Counsel. Counsel, I think there's a number of questions that we probably all have for you. I'd like to start, and the two areas I'm interested in jeopardy assessment has no right to a hearing? That's part one. That was what counsel had suggested. And the second part is, what about the unauthorized person making this representation?
Okay. On the jeopardy assessment, there is absolutely nothing about this assessment that indicates it's a jeopardy assessment. It's not called a jeopardy assessment. It doesn't say you have no rights to a hearing, which is what the city says would follow from a jeopardy assessment. Exactly to the contrary, it says in the assessment itself, and it's attached as an appendix to our reply brief, it says you have the right to appeal under section 20-11-1 of the code. That's the code provision that provides for city hearings. And none of the facts that typically would support a jeopardy assessment, risk of flight, dissipation of assets, none of that's ever been alleged, claimed, and the city never took any action consistent with that. It never sought immediate collection of this amount. For 2 years, it continued to conduct an audit, which is inconsistent with the notion that jeopardy might take place. Forgive me.
The other one was the unauthorized representation. In other words, why should the city be bound by the representations made by an unauthorized staff member when it wasn't the city manager as provided in the code?
First, I don't think that provision exists in the code. I don't know what council is referring to, that only the city manager can agree. The city manager can agree to extend the deadline for filing your initial protest. I don't know that the city there's any provision that says the city manager has to agree to extend the deadline for going to court. I don't think it exists. But I don't think you need to rely just on an offhand comment of a city official. It's stated in the regulation. They've got a regulation that has the force of law that told everybody in no uncertain terms, you have to wait for a hearing decision before you can go forward. That, to me, is the best grounds upon which to base some kind of waiver or estoppel claim. Can I make one last point? With all due respect, I don't even think you need to get to the waiver or estoppel arguments, because I think the city exercised the lawful right under subsection 9 to offer taxpayers a third appeal route, and nowhere in that subsection 9 or anywhere else in the state appeal statute does it require the taxpayer to move forward within 90 days.
Great. Hold on 1 second. Judge, do you have any further questions? Judge, do you have any questions? Okay. Thank you, counsel. Your time has expired. I want to thank counsel for their arguments. They were excellent arguments. I thank you both for your arguments. The case will stand submitted. An opinion will issue in due course. Thank you.